Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 6th of July 2014. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Gareth James and Nick from Partially Obstructed View.
We're now going to talk about Wonderland at Hampstead Theatre. This is a new play by Beth Steele and is directed by Edward Hall. The play concerns the 1984-85 miners' strike and is based mainly around a Nottinghamshire colliery, where we see miners' experiences of the onset of and progress of the miners' strike. Other scenes show us figures like Peter Walker and the National Coal Board boss Ian McGregor and how they dealt with the run-up and the execution of the strike. Gareth, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, I think it's a very true representation of both miners' work, mining communities, and indeed the miners' strike. What they do in the first act is it's the build-up to the strike. So the first act takes place entirely in the mine, and Ashley Martin Davis has created the most extraordinary metal structure, where you have sort of a vast pit and you have overhead walkway just like a mine. It's spectacular, but it does actually successfully convey, you know, the dreadful jobs that they have to do, the risks that they have to take, and the horror of the occupation, really. What it does in the second half, I think, is tells the personal stories of people during the miners' strike. So clearly, on the one hand, you've got these communities pitted against one another, individuals and families pitted against one another. Then you've got these plotters, these people who are plotting to effectively close an entire industry, and the politicians and their sort of hired hands, as it were. And the play does take sides. I mean, the play, you know what side she's on, and I'm on the same side as a miner's son from South Wales. So you do know that. However, it seemed to me to be a very successful slice of social history and a very human kind of story. So I thought it was a very good play. I thought it was extremely well produced at Hampstead. But I have to say, I think it's probably in the wrong theatre, because I felt in a not full house, after pretty good reviews, that it was an audience that frankly didn't have empathy with this piece. And I feel in a way it's playing to the wrong crowd. And I'm not saying it should be playing to a partisan crowd, but I think it's playing to a crowd that really don't empathise with it. But I thought it was a terrific piece of theatre, I have to say.
Yeah, I agree. It is very well done. I mean, I didn't find it that nasty towards some of the people. I mean, you did think that people like, they depict Peter Walker and they have Ian McGregor. And you do think, to start off with, that they've kind of got, you know, a good commercial plan. I mean, the idea was that the NCB, the coal industry, was losing money at the time, and they, to sort of rationalise it, knew that there was going to be a strike on. They kind of had their hearts in the right place about sort of trying to rationalise the coal industry, but knew that they couldn't do that without a fight. And but also there were sort of the other forces, the arch Thatcherites, whose ideas of the way they did industry is that British industries was on its knees, and they basically said, well, kick away its crutches and see if it can walk. And that meant that lots and lots of things that could have been saved went to the wall. And it was always disgraceful in the time of Thatcher that you had them pumping money into stuff that they were going to privatise, making it efficient, making it really good, when they could have just done that to the nationalised industries that they despised. And although I'm not sure I particularly want other than the kind of ideas of supporting, making sure that the mine working is good and fair, and you know they are decently paid and in good conditions. Other than that, I'm not sure I particularly want to own. I want people to own the mines, but we were kind of on the side of the miners throughout this, and not on the side of government. The only thing I thought was lacking: we don't get Thatcher, which we don't really need, and we don't get Scargill, and we wouldn't get a decent story out of either of those anyway, because they're so fixed in their positions. But what we don't get here is we don't get sort of what the NUM were doing and what the NUM were thinking at the time. And it would have been fascinating to see that, because you see the machinations of the government, but not the machinations of the NUM. In fact, you get, they're good union men, most of the people in the pit, but but you don't really get the sort of the union side of things, which is, you know, they're a little bit missing there. And I think actually it hasn't really been dealt with in fiction. I've not really seen too many depictions of, you know, what it was actually like in the union itself while the strike was going on. And That was one slight thing. I thought it was missing. I mean, I don't think this play needs much more. There are some fascinating characters on the side of the Tories. I mean, we get this ludicrous man, David Hart, who basically wandered in, you know, almost off the street and appointed himself as an advisor to MacGregor. And another thing I wanted to mention was Orgreave. The Battle of Orgreave, they can't do too much on the Battle of Orgreave because it was a mass confrontation, and they've only got about 20 people in all on stage. One problem I had with it was they tell us that there were soldiers disguised as policemen on Orgreave, and they were sort of held in reserve, and then suddenly somebody gets a photograph of a soldier dressed as a soldier. And they're trying to smuggle that photograph out, and the police are trying to grab it, and that took me out of it a little bit. I don't know what evidence there is for soldiers being at Orgreave en masse. I don't know. I've never seen too much presented about that. It's a common theory because, of course, it's a mark of authoritarianism if the police are brought onto the streets. But it's also that the army really don't like being brought onto the streets, and the first, you know, they are usually the first people who object whenever it's suggested. And also, if you are disguising soldiers as policemen, the first thing you do is make sure nobody in the 10 mile radius is wearing an army uniform. I mean, that would seem to be logic. So I didn't quite buy it, and it did take me out of the play slightly. I mean, yes, it is what the activists thought, and it may even be true. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if, you know, elements of the SAS or various people in military intelligence were hanging around, because they always get involved with civilians, but soldiers perhaps not. And you would have got squaddies coming forward and saying, "Yeah, I was at Orgreave. Yeah, we were all dressed up as policemen." Except Bob, who was photographed in his military uniform for some reason. And it didn't make sense, and it took me out of what is a very strong drama. And it does tell you the tragedy of it. But part of the tragedy, of course, is that Arthur Scargill could have handled it better. You know, he gave them the excuse and all the time, and it really, really annoyed me about him. Anyway, I'm sure you've got tons to say about me.
Oh, no, I mean, I think Arthur Scargill handled it very badly, you know, and I think he underestimated his opponent, because I think that Thatcher was intent on closing down what she considered to be a competitive industry, and he underestimated the dirty tricks that she was prepared to pull in order to achieve her objectives. And the bizarre objectives, really, because what she was doing was she was closing down a British industry and losing British jobs and killing British communities in order to prop up subsidised coal from other countries. Even after the miners' strike, the last mine left, which was basically a management and miner buyout, was competing against subsidised coal from other countries. It was itself unsubsidised, and it didn't have an absolute chance. So this was bizarre business ideology. But she was intent on doing it. He underestimated her, and the whole thing was a bloody disaster as a result.
They were also fighting the last battle, because the Tories lost in 1974 when the miners really struck against them. And with the hindsight of the loser, the Tories prepared much better for a potential strike. I mean, they almost thought the strike was coming. And Scargill thought he could just, you know, I think just thought he could just win again because they won in 1974.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You know, there is enough objectivity in this, even though you know where she stands. There is another objectivity in this to see this as a pretty well-researched and accurate piece of social history 30 years on to the year. And I think it does faithfully represent the occupation, and I think it faithfully represents what happened in the miners' strike. And I think it should be seen. I think it's a very, very well-written, very well-staged piece of work.
And another feather in the cap for the Hampstead, I think, you know, it's three things this year have been very well worth seeing.
But sad that Hampstead's audience are not supporting it. That's the big sadness, because they're not. It's still not selling out, and it should be.
We're now going to talk about Adler and Gibb, written and directed by Tim Crouch at the Royal Court. Gareth, tell me more about this and what you thought.
Well, it's a play about a pair of American female conceptual artists who are fictitious. But for me, they bear some resemblance, apart from the fact they're American and female, to Gilbert and George, in that they live their art. And perhaps also that they were taking the piss as well. So the piece takes the form of a film being made about the artists. So you go from rehearsal to location, recce's to filming to viewing. And then you also have this framing of a scholarship presentation by an art student who's talking about the artists and the creation of the film. So it's very clever. Indeed, the interval is part of it, and there's a really nice twist at the end. And it's a very clever idea, but I thought it was a very laboured idea, and it was a bit too obtuse, really. And if he is making a point, for me, it got lost in the kind of pursuit of cleverness, really. In particular, the first half is really quite slow and really quite dull. It does get better after the interval, but a lot of people, of course, haven't stayed after the interval. And all the staging and the acting, there's some particularly good projectile vomiting, and there's some pretty good. There is some bizarre things in the staging. There are a couple of children who seem, for whatever reason, to kind of fetch and carry things and then stand in for a body and a dead dog. There's a man with a ponytail at the side of the stage who's there for whatever reason, I don't know. And I think that the whole thing is just a bit self-indulgent, really. It does intrigue you and surprise you some of the time, but I thought it was all a bit pointless, frankly. It's a kind of in-joke. That's what I felt it was. And I wondered whether the fact that Tim Crouch, who apparently normally acts in his work and didn't this time, but does direct this time, I wonder whether he shouldn't have directed himself, and I wonder whether somebody else might have brought some creative balance to it. So I just thought it was all a bit pointless and not something I was particularly thrilled to have gone to see, to be honest.
Yeah, I have to say pointless is a good word for it. I have problems with Tim Crouch because I don't consider him an artist. I had a lot of problems with his piece, The Author, which people rave about, but I could see too much artifice in it. And I don't trust him as an artist, as it were, and I don't think he really got away with it there or convinced me that what he's doing is art. It all seemed a bit scrappy, a bit messy, and as you say, a bit pointless. I mean, you can get away with something apparently pointless if you can convince me that he's got some good ideas in his head and he's sort of mucking about, but I think he's not convinced me of that, and he's just mucking about, unfortunately. What do you think about it, Nick?
Well, it sounds like I was a lot more positive about it than either of you. I don't know that I would... I know that some of the praise has kind of seen it as the greatest thing for years, which I don't think it necessarily was. But I certainly found it interesting, although I will qualify that, like most people, it is hard going in the first half, and it is quite deliberately obtuse in the first half. And I think, you know, you're either going to just accept that and go with it, or you're not. I found it had a lot of food for thought, and that was really, for me, its main quality that I liked about it, was there was a lot of... It's strange. There's certain things that I'll watch and kind of feel like I don't know what the person was trying to do, and it frustrates me. And this, I think, maybe because the way that it was presented and the style of it was so obviously anti-naturalistic and kind of playing around with what it was trying to do, that I didn't mind so much that its meaning was kind of vague. And I like the fact that everybody who has liked it has come away with a different interpretation of it. I mean, for me, I came away with a lot of things about sort of creative's personality and the way that... because the personality of Adler is kind of... who's the one character we don't actually see on stage in any form except for someone playing her in the film of her life very briefly. Her personality is kind of all through everything, and it's kind of... there's a sense of, to me, that in art... and not just modern conceptual art. I mean, you see it with all kind of famous artists down the centuries. There's kind of certain artists who you have a legend that's kind of attached to the peculiarities of their lives, and the way that within art, kind of the eccentricities of the artist become a part of the art. Whereas I think there's kind of a bit of a piss take of a certain kind of American method acting, which again, the actor, kind of the artist in this case, they kind of like to claim that their personality becomes irrelevant and it's lost because it's all about that they become the character. So whoever kind of the creative is in the discussion, it always ends up being Adler's personality that matters. But I know there's obviously sort of elements in there as well about the sort of vague value that gets imposed on pieces of art, and, you know, the financial value that kind of is quite a nebulous thing to determine. But for me, that was what it was largely about, was a piece about our personalities and how they become part of art, or are kind of, or there's a pretense that they're more important or less important than they actually are. So it's certainly one it's an awkward one to watch, especially at the start, but it did to me feel rewarding by the end, and it's one that kind of stuck with me in terms of trying to piece out meaning from it. And I personally found it well worth watching, but I know it's definitely had this kind of Marmite response.
Certainly, I mean, I had quite a lot of walkers on the night I went, but also it had its cheerers at the end of the evening as well. So, as you say, it is another one, a bit like Mr. Burns we talked about last week, that is dividing people, I think.
I didn't not like it, but I didn't, as I say, I have problems with, I think I have problems with Tim Crouch, and I don't trust him, and I don't, you know, I don't believe that he's got lots of clever ideas in his head, and that's my problem with him. We're now going to talk about Skylight, which is on at the Wyndham's Theatre. This is a play by David Hare, done at the National in, I think, 1995, directed by Richard Eyre, and starred Lear Williams and Michael Gambon. This production is directed by Stephen Daldry and stars Kerry Mulligan and Bill Nighy and Matthew Beard. It's a play set in a rundown Kensal Rise flat in the early 1990s, and it concerns Kira Hollis, who receives an unexpected visit from the son of her former lover and her former lover, and later her former lover, Tom Sargent. Her lover is a restaurateur. During the 80s, she helped him run his restaurants. She was first hired as a waitress, and on the very night she was hired as a waitress, she was promoted to maitre d' and made to run the restaurant for a night, and she did such a good job. She was sort of adopted by Tom Sargent and his wife, and became almost part of the family. This wasn't helped because she has started an affair with Tom Sargent. As a result of the affair, when their adultery was discovered, she basically ran away and started a new life as a teacher in a rather rundown part of the East End, I think it's the East Ham, and she commutes every day all the way from Kensal Rise to East Ham, and has almost, well, certainly the way that Tom sees it, he sees it as that she's being self-sacrificing for the sake of it, and for you know, to expunge some kind of guilt, the guilt of the comfortable life that she could perhaps live. Now that Tom's wife has died, perhaps there is a future for them, and, you know, he can give her a rich life because he's successful, and she's been part of success, and they would make a great team, and that's the way he sees it. But she sees that she's doing something worthwhile now as a teacher, and she's helping people, and she feels more virtuous than she would as a restaurateur. And there's a lot of debates about that, and perhaps that's a weakness in this play. You do get some very good points being made. There was a big round of applause for some of the things that she said about the way she perceived the world and her worldview, which is a very sort of right-on lefty worldview. But also, you get a large amount of people telling you stuff that they already know. They're a kind of idea that they things that you're sure that each person already knows. You wouldn't really talk to each other like that. It's far too much expositional dialogue, and that's perhaps a weakness of this play. But it is pretty well performed. I mean, I think there is perhaps a problem here with Bill Nighy. He's certainly sexy enough to convince as Kerry Mulligan's former lover, and they do seem to have a very good chemistry. But doesn't convince as a restaurateur. You think of slightly more for, well, fleshy people. I mean, if you think about Michael Gambon and how he was in the 1990s, I mean, it's sort of a slightly bulkier person, somebody who actually eats in their restaurants rather than just owning them. And he doesn't strike you as that. When he says he's lost some weight recently, well, yeah, he's lost an awful lot of weight recently by the looks of things, because Bill Nighy is as thin as a rake, and it was a slight problem for me believing him. He just doesn't really feel the right person, and I somehow suspect that because David Hare has used him quite a lot in his writing recently, some of his television films, David Hare wanted Bill Nighy for this part, and I'm not sure that Bill Nighy is quite right for this. What did you think about it, Nick?
I didn't particularly have a problem with him in the role at all. I mean, I'm not really someone who follows chefs and restaurateurs, but I get the feeling they come in all shapes and sizes themselves, so that didn't bother me. I'm just pleased that we've got Bill Nighy back on stage finally, and hopefully it'll lead him to do a bit more stage work than he has done for a long time. I think, I mean, yes, the play itself, you can see the flaws in the way that it is constructed as this series of kind of political arguments that the two make. But I think given that, it's actually pretty impressive how well it stands up and how entertainingly it stands up, given what, I mean, you know, if you describe something as that, it sounds incredibly tedious and worthy, which I don't think it comes across as. And even though I think pretty clearly that the side we're meant to take is Kira's, who's the Kerry Mulligan character, I also feel like the sort of the more right-wing side isn't demonized entirely here. I think there's certainly things that Tom says that are accurate about the fact that there's an element of self-flagellation to the way she lives her life now, because there certainly is this kind of, it does seem like she's gone out of her way to find every little way to make her own life more inconvenient for herself. So I think as a play, I hadn't seen the original production, so the play was new to me, and I really thought it was pretty impressive. Not perfect, but impressive. And I really enjoyed the production. I was, like I said, I was really pleased to, I'd seen Bill Nighy on stage a very long time ago, so I didn't have a very strong memory of having seen him on before. But I found his kind of style of naturalism quite, it stood out to me, the way that he runs into his own sentences as if he's kind of, as a real person will, as I tend to, you know, you don't necessarily make complete sense in what you say because your brain's sometimes running ahead of your mouth. And I really enjoyed that in his performance. And I think it's also worth mentioning Bob Crowley's set, which is backdrop of the estate on which Kira lives, which is a lovely piece of kind of perspective work, because I was fairly high up in the gods, and even from there, kind of looking down on this kind of estate, you knew that there was just a stage behind there, but it looked like there was a real estate back there. So I think there's been a mixed bag of quality going into the West End in the last couple of years, and certainly this, you know, as star vehicles go, I'm happy if they're of this kind of quality.
As I said, I didn't think he was entirely right. I mean, when I think of the restaurateurs, I tend to think of people like Terence Conran and Langan, I think it was, and they were very, very much early 1990s sort of star restaurateurs. They'd be opening restaurants all over the place, and that's who I thought of who I think of when I think of restaurateurs. But you are right, of course, they will come in lots of different flavours. It was just and Bill Nighy certainly. I mean, they have chemistry. They have excellent chemistry together, and you can certainly believe that they've had, you know, they've had a relationship with each other. The other thing, also, I mean, it's just a cheap thing, really, but a live spaghetti bolognese made on stage, and reminding me that I never make it correctly.
I mean, the interesting thing with casting Bill Nighy in it to me is that, of course, it was Michael Gambon originally, but when he left the original production, it was Bill Nighy who replaced him. So this is actually sort of, I think it's a gap of 17 years in which he's played the same role and still doesn't seem wrong for it, which I think is quite impressive. But it says a lot about, I think, given the role that it is, and the fact that, you know, what you need to believe about it is that he's had this affair with this much younger woman, I think it's largely down to kind of his charm that lets you get away with the fact that he's obviously a lot older than the part was written for, because he played it nearly two decades ago. Yeah, I was happy with this, and I was happy with the bolognese as well. Yeah, no, I think that the bolognese is the only thing that kind of comes close to distracting from the performances, is because you kind of the backstage crew must be turning down the heat every so often, because there's times when the actors are ignoring it for quite a long time. So it's the only thing that distracts from the performances at all. But it's quite impressive of Kerry Mulligan to kind of cook the whole thing while kind of performing, and unless they actually swap it over for the second act, she's actually made it edible for herself.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the As Yet Unnamed London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.